Likutei Sichos, Chelek Chav Beis, Volume 22, the first Sicha for Parsha Tazria. Being that in the beginning of this week's Parsha, there is the mention of the mitzvah of Bris Milah, the performance of a circumcision on the eighth day from when a baby is born, a baby boy that is, this Sicha will have an amazing explanation on the idea, the concept, the custom of having a kvater. A kvater is a man and a woman who deliver the baby to the Kisei Shel Eliyahu HaNavi, to the, quote, seat of Eliyahu HaNavi, where the bris will actually take place. Just as an introduction, to familiarize ourselves with some concepts, there's a rule that says, Minag Yisrael Toirahi, literally translated, a custom of Jews, a Jewish custom, is Torah. What does this mean? So the Rebbe explains in the course of the Sicha, this has two meanings. Number one, that it has the power of enforcement as if it were a law, an actual rule in the Torah, explicit rule in the Torah, has the same power. Number two, the word Torah means hayra'a. It means a directive. And the Rebbe says in each minhag, when examined, one will find the unique concept associated with that minhag, which it in itself will serves as a hayra'a, as a directive, as an important lesson in life. Another thing to familiarize ourselves with, we know that many times Chazal bring examples of things that happen down here as to give us an idea, a glimpse as to what happens up there, meaning in the spiritual realm. However, Chassidus explains that the real truth is that really they originate in the spiritual realm. And as a result, after they evolve, they come down to this world and they have somewhat of a reflection in this world. Another thing to familiarize ourselves with is the idea that the Medrash says that prior to Matan Torah, before Hashem came down on Mount Sinai and officially delivered us the Torah, there was a gzera, there was a decree slash a split between Elyonim and Tachtonim, between anything of the upper worlds and the lower worlds, meaning matter and spirit did not mix. Once Hashem gave us the Torah, He annulled, so to speak, He voided that decree, and now there can be a connection, there can be a fusion between the spiritual and the material. So let's get into the Sicha. The Jewish custom is that when a baby boy is brought to the bris, he is brought into the room and to the place where they're going to perform the bris through what's called a kvaterin, or kvater. And it's specifically a man and a woman, a male and a female. The woman brings the baby until the door of the shul or the room in which the bris is going to be performed. And there the man takes over the baby and delivers the baby to the Kisei Shel Eliyahu HaNavi. Now the Rebbe says we know the rule, as we mentioned in the introduction, Minig Yisrael Torahi, that the minig, a custom amongst Jews, has the power of Torah and has the lessons that Torah would normally give. Now, so what is this all about? Simply speaking, it can be understood why the woman is involved in this process of delivering the baby. And this perhaps is in order to give the woman a part in this mitzvah. You see, because the mitzvah itself, meaning the obligation of having a baby boy circumcised, really is on the father, is on the males. And it makes sense because it's the male who, in the first place, is connected to this mitzvah. In fact, there's even debate in halacha if a woman is kosher to perform a bris, because she herself is not in the obligation of this mitzvah. So perhaps in order to give her also somewhat of a connection and a participation in the mitzvah, therefore the custom is that with the kvater, it consists of a man and a woman. This perhaps is the basic reason. However, there's got to be more to it. Because the Rebbe says, you see, the custom is in many communities that the woman who is kvaterin, the woman who is delivering the baby to the bris, should not be an expectant mother, should not be pregnant. Now, there are those who say perhaps it's because of an evil eye. If she's pregnant, it can perhaps, you know, in public, carrying a baby, it can perhaps cause an ayin hara. However, the Rebbe negates this notion, and he says that this cannot be a sufficient reason. Why? Because this is just a side reason. This is not a reason to inherently take a woman and cancel out from being part of this mitzvah, if indeed she has the opportunity to do so. So therefore, the Rebbe says there must be something deeper, inherent in the custom, the actual performance of this custom, which negates, which does not allow for, doesn't make room for a woman who is expecting to be part of this mitzvah. What is the explanation of this? Says the Rebbe, in order to explain this, we'll have to preface by a very similar custom. And that is that when a couple is getting married, a chasan and a kala standing under the chuppah, or coming to the chuppah, they are also led by what's called shushvinim, people who escort them. And who are those typically? Well, typically it has to be a married couple, a man and a woman who are actually married, and they bring the chasan and then later the kala to the chuppah. And here too, we find a very similar parallel custom, that it's specifically a woman who is not pregnant. She should not be expecting. Now, and in fact, Rebbe says, in many Sfarim, in many sources, they actually say that there's a connection between these two, between Kvatar by a bris and Shushvinim by a wedding. What is the explanation, says the Rebbe? Well, we find something very interesting in Shulchan Aruch regarding an expectant woman. A woman is expecting a baby. When it comes to Erev Yom Kippur, when we do Kaparis, when we do this ritual, it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch that she should take not just a female, not just a hen, but also a male, a rooster. Why? Because in case she is expecting a boy, she needs to have a kapara not just for herself, but also for the child. And in fact, according to the Arizal, she actually takes three, because the Arizal emphasizes that each person should have their own kapara, and therefore it's also a possibility that maybe she's carrying a female. And therefore, the one that she takes for herself isn't sufficient, she should take two females and one male. But in other words, what do we see? That she's no longer counted as one person, rather as two people. And perhaps this will apply, this idea could apply now to Kvater and Shushvinim. That in, because you need two people, not three. And if she's expecting, now based on that rule with Kaparis, we can deduce that she is counted halachically, she is considered, that is, as if she is more than one person. However, says the Rebbe, we can ask a question. Under the chuppah, there is a multitude of people. It's not just the bride and the groom, it's not just the chasan and the kala, and the shushvinim who stand at the chuppah. You usually have the rabbi, and you have other peoples, people are honored. So what is really the big deal if there's, quote, another person, another entity under the chuppah? So why should that cancel out the woman that is expecting and is now considered like to be more than just one person? Why does it cancel her out from having the opportunity of being a shushvinim? And the Rebbe answers as follows. When you analyze it closely, you'll understand that a woman who's expecting, it's not that we consider her as two people. Because if you consider her as two people, think about it logically, she would not need a second kapara. She would not require another chicken or rooster. She wouldn't. Why not? Because that person who is, quote, if we consider them a second person, as a second entity, that person is not even born. That person never even sinned. Why would they need a kapara? Rather, says the Rebbe, when you analyze it, you come to the conclusion that the idea is as follows. The mother who's expecting, her status, her entity has changed. She is no longer considered one person. She is now considered more than one person. She is considered to be two people. And therefore, as far as the fetus that's in her, in a sense, it's separate from her. And therefore, it's considered as a separate entity. But on the other hand, the existence of the fetus, its survival, and everything that happens to it and with it, whether it's a male or a female, is all dependent on the mother. It's all part of the mother's body. Whatever the mother eats, quote-unquote, as the Chazal say, so too does the fetus eat, and so on. So it's part of her, and therefore she needs to have more than one kapara, either two according to Shulchan Aruch or three according to Arizal. Because she is now not just the one person that she was up till now, but she is one person that consists of more than one. And in fact, let's say, for example, why does she take a male? Because if indeed it turns out after she gives birth that she was carrying a male, so that means that while she during the pregnancy, she was a mother who also had some kind of male aspect to her or in her. And according to this, we can understand why we don't take, why a woman who was expecting could not serve as a shushvinin, as the person to escort the bride to the chuppah. Because the idea is that the person escorting the bride should be one person. This person is not one person. This person is one walking person who actually consists of more than one. For example, in this case, two. Maybe even more if she's carrying twins or so on. But the question is, let's just understand, why do we need to specifically use a man and a woman? Why is it that to escort the chassan and kala to the chuppah, what is it about this idea? What is it, what's behind it, that you need to have a man and a woman to escort the chassan and kala? And the same is by a baby. Why do you need a man and woman, and therefore we insist that it should be one woman, and therefore she's expecting, you cannot use her because she is now more than just one woman, and she may even have a male aspect to her. The answer is, let's start with the chassan and kala. You see, it's brought down that the primary reason for shushvinin is because there is some kind of shyness, there's an embarrassment here. You see, because until now, the chassan and kala were practically strangers. Now, they're going to become one entity. And therefore, they need to have that support to kind of bring them to each other, and then once they become one entity, now they're comfortable, so to speak. And therefore, we understand why it has to be specifically a man and a woman, and why they have to be married. Because in a sense, the man, the male, is supporting the chassan, and he kind of was like, quote-unquote, I went through this, I know what it's about. And likewise, the woman. They give them that support. They give them that confidence, that comfort, as they're leading them to the chuppah, and they're taking away that shyness, that embarrassment, that hesitation. Says the Rebbe, everything that happens down here is actually a reflection and a result of what happens in the spiritual realm. Meaning after they evolve, it comes down here to, in the literal sense, of a chassan and a kala that have some kind of embarrassment, they are far apart, and they need that help, they need that support to bring them together. Where do we find this concept in the spiritual realm? Says the Rebbe, this idea derives from the marriage, quote-unquote, of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of Hashem, with Knesset Yisrael, with the Jewish people. When did that take place? By Matan Torah. And there too, we find that there were two shushvinim. Who were these shushvinim? Moshe and Aaron. And each one played a role. Moshe played the role of bringing down melmaila lamata, so to speak, bringing godliness down to the people. And Aaron played the role of supporting the people and bringing them up, bringing them close to Hashem. And this is similar to the idea where somebody leads the chassan to the chuppah, and then later leads the kala to the chassan. Why did they need to have a shishvinin by this marriage / matan Torah? What is it about it that they needed to have it? In other words, why would there need to be a support, so to speak, for Hashem to come down and for the Jewish people to come up, to come close to Hashem? The answer is that indeed, as we know, the neshama, our souls, that which makes us Jewish, is a chelek elokam imal mamash. It's actually a piece of Hashem. And therefore, it's already essentially connected. And therefore, the question begs, so why do you need to have some support? We're not strangers. We're not distant. The answer is that when Hashem puts the neshama into the body, it seems, it appears, it has that appearance of being distant. It doesn't feel its connection to its source. And therefore, it needs to have that support. And this is very similar to what happens by an actual chassan and kala. And actually, Chassid and Kala, as it's explained in the Zohar, they're not two people that are coming together to become one. Actually, the Zohar explains that they are plag nishmasa. They are really, really two half souls of one soul that have been separated, so to speak, at birth, when they came down to the world. And Hashem makes it so that they find each other. And now when they get together, it's not two strangers that are coming together, but rather it's two halves of the same soul that are becoming reunited. And this is the same idea as Matan Torah. We are part of Hashem, but when we were put down into this world, it gives the appearance as if we're distant from Hashem. And when it came Matan Torah, they had to come together. And now we can appreciate why the Shushvinim are so much associated with the concept of Simcha. Only when there's Shushvinim do you have Simcha, do you have joy. Why? What triggers joy? What really brings about joy? Something that's a novelty. Something that is extraordinary. Something that's new. Something that's not, so to speak, the norm. The regular day today, you don't get joyous for having breakfast, so to speak, for doing the normal routines. But when something extraordinary happens, there's a novelty that triggers joy. Likewise over here, by Yechassan and Kala, they seem like they're distant, as if they're two separate people, although deep down they're really one. And now they become together and they become a new one entity. That is cause for joy. That's like a novelty. The same thing is with Matan Torah. The world and Hashem seem to be separate. In fact, as we said in the introduction, there was a decree, there was a split, a gzera, which said that there is Elyonim and there is Tachtonim. They don't mix. Came Matan Torah and said, no, there is a new entity. There's a new system. There is a new reality. And that is that now the Elyonim and the Tachtonim could blend, could mix. You can fuse them together. The world can become connected to Hashem. And therefore, this is a cause for joy. And now we'll appreciate the idea of kvater. We'll understand how this applies and how it connects to the inyan, to this concept of shushvinim. Why, by a bris milah, do we need kvater in the first place? The answer is, what happens by a bris milah? It says that the bris milah makes brisi bipsarchem livris oilam, that I make my covenant in your flesh, in your physical flesh, for an everlasting covenant. That means the same idea that was accomplished by Matan Torah, that two things that seemed to be apart and were indeed apart, Elyonim and Tachtonim, they came together, likewise gets accomplished by a bris milah. And you actually see it. You see that there is a physical effect, that now a transformation in the physical flesh of this child that is going to remain forever. And what does that bring with it? In other words, what does the bris milah bring with it? What happens? So we know, the Alter Rebbe says that by the bris milah is tchilas knisas nefesh elikis, that the beginning of the entry of the godly soul in the baby boy happens by his bris milah. And therefore, now everything makes sense. Just like by a wedding, when you have this new, this new novelty, this new idea that comes, that happens, a new entity is forming, something which two things which seem apart now are becoming one. Likewise over here, by a bris, we have a similar situation, and therefore, just like a wedding calls for an ish and a isha, a man and a woman, to lend their support and to escort the chassan and kala, so too over here, there's an ish and a isha involved in the process to bringing the baby to performance of the bris. And this is to hint on this, that one is on the side of Hashem, so to speak, and one is on the side of the body of the child, that is the man and the woman. And there now, we can also appreciate why there is such a great joy by bris milah. There is a pasuk in Kapitel Kuf Yutes, in chapter 119 in Tehillim, that says, "Sas anoichi alim esecha," that I rejoice tremendously on your teachings, on your words, meaning on your mitzvahs. Now, the Chazal tell us that this is a direct reference to the mitzvah of bris milah. And of course, the question is, what do you mean? Every single mitzvah, we're told, ivdu es Hashem b'simcha, that you have to serve Hashem with joy. So why here is this, so to speak, stand out in an extraordinary manner, that specifically with the Bris Milah, we say Sas Anoichi, because over here there is a true simcha, more so than in any other performance of any other mitzvah. Over here you see it, that there's something extraordinary that happens. You take Hashem, the Nefesh HaMekis, and it enters the body, and it has a physical effect on the person which is never ever going to go away. And since this is like a new entity, a new connection, a connection between God and the body, the material flesh, therefore, you have such great joy. And besides, the mere birth of a child, of a Yiddish kid, is already a result of an extraordinary connection, and that in itself is also being rejoiced. That is also contributing to this greatly to this joy. What is that? The Torah says, Al kein yaziv ish es aviv es imay, a man should leave his father and mother, v'dovak be'ishto, he should cleave to his child. V'hoyu l'basar echad, they should become to one flesh. Where do you see it? In the birth of a child. And now when you have the Bris Milah, now it comes down and you can see it, that there is a connection between Hashem and this child. The Rebbe, by the way, points out, obviously the women are not in any way to lose out on this extraordinary connection. They already have it built in from when they were born. The fact, by virtue of their birth, which is also a result of Hashem and the couple coming together, becoming partners, that results in the woman having her already connection to Hashem, but there she's not performing it physically, so she doesn't need to have that whole the whole process of a man and a woman leading her, and so on. Says the Rebbe, by performing these two great mitzvahs, the mitzvah of Milah, of Bris Milah, and the mitzvah of marriage, of Pru Avu, which is very much associated with this, we will certainly merit to the Geula Hamitis Vashlema, where there will be the ultimate Milah, as it says, Umol Hashem Elokecha Slavochas Azvav Zarecha, that Hashem will, quote, circumcise the heart, meaning take away all that blockage from the heart and of you and your children. And then, of course, there will be the ultimate completion and the fulfillment of that marriage which began at Matan Torah, the marriage between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael.